Dan Roberts and Gordon Black each wended their ways to Mendocino County in the early 1970s. They joined a burgeoning poetry scene. Here's Gordon recounting his experience of poetry readings in Mendocino some 50 years ago.
I was a prose writer. I was trying to work on a novel, living in a chicken coop and at Val Pollack's ranch, and very happily, and working away and trying to write an anti-war novel in which the protagonist is searching for a phrase to put on a bumper sticker to resolve all the confusion in the American society and the disagreement about what is going on. Does that sound kind of familiar? That takes us back to the days of opposition and discord during the Vietnam period. Didn't consider myself to be a poet. I thought I was an experimental writer. That was my phrase for it. But I did show up at these poetry readings to read paragraphs that I was spending too much time polishing. I was losing my forward motion as a writer, and I'm spending too much time going for a perfect paragraph, which meant I was really moving toward being a poet, which eventually happened. People around me were poets. There was Sharon Dubiago, Bill Brad, and several other people, and we bounced off each other and turned each other into what we are today. You know, there are many different definitions of poetry, as many definitions as breaths one can take. Distilled conversation, I like that. My own definition of a poem is a pattern of words such that if you tap it with a little silver hammer, it rings.
Wow.
That's nice.
Good one.
Yep. Do you have a definition, Dan? Do you have a poetry definition?
If I do, it would be, there'd be many of them, because I taught poetry in the schools for 33 years. And so my definition of what poetry has changed a lot. I mean, I started writing poetry when I was in actually the eighth grade, but then a lot in high school. And I thought, you know, lyrical was a big part of poetry. The poetry I wrote at that in high school was lyrical, and it was also kind of a lot of exorcisms of getting stuff out of me that really had tied me up in knots. Like, I was raised in a really strict Catholic family, and I was also raised to ask questions about everything. And I asked too many questions when I was in the sixth and seventh grade, and I really stopped believing in Catholicism, and that created this huge block with my parents. And the only way I could free myself from it was to write it out in poetry. And the teachers I had, I went to St. Mary's College High School in Berkeley, and we had really cool English teachers, and they were into poetry, and they were into using it as a way of liberating yourself. So part of me is, you know, poetry can be a lyrical adventure. It can be an exorcism. It can be an invitation. The best poetry to me for the writer is poetry that you start off with one idea of where you're going, and it turns into this other thing, and you follow it, and you end up at this new place, so that the act of writing is actually this searching and finding, rather than knowing in advance where you're going to go with it. So what I focused on in teaching in the schools, which I felt really lucky to get to do, was getting kids to blow stuff out, you know, and also recognize the situations they were in. So I came up with some exercises. One was called My True Country. And I asked them to think about, if their country is really the United States, is it Mendocino? Is it, where is it? Where are you really at? And they used that model as a way to talk about what they really loved on this earth. So for me, there's the poetry of the all-stars who say the best things in the best amount of time. And then there's also the practical kind of poetry where poetry can be used to clean yourself out, to get to express stuff that you cannot express in a real literal way. And becoming self-aware. I had a paper out in Oakland Hills, and one of my clients, is that what you call it, person that you deliver the Oakland Tribune to, was a poet from UC Berkeley. And I got to talking to him about it because I discovered that I could write poetry and feel way better about myself. And he said, save everything you write, and when you're 21, go through it and reread it, and then throw away all the junk. And if there's anything worth saving, save. And I thought, well, that's kind of brilliant. And so I did that. And so when I turned 21, I went through and it all revealed a lot to me, but most of it was really stuff I wouldn't want to put out as, here's my poem. It was really more for myself.
And Gordon, do you remember an early poem or maybe even your first poem?
Okay, well, here's a pretty early one, if I can remember it. Low tech in the great Northwest. You did a job, plastic tarp, shielding firewood against the winter worst. The sound of your indifference to the rain rattling wild. Deep in my sleep, let me read a book. Better you in the wet, cold and stiff than I. Now blinking in new light, I haul you off my last named pieces of wood. Tug you stretching in the heat. Flash away the clinging drops, dry you, tie you, and save next year's 20 bucks. I'm calling it spring.
That's wonderful.
Now that poem is problematic. That poem is problematic because in its original form, the price of the plastic tarp was $6. That was a long time ago, and that makes no sense anymore. And at that time, my little firewood pile was a lot smaller than it has to be now. So $20 isn't exactly the right figure for the tarp anymore either. It's more like $40 for the proper size tarp. So when does a poem ever become eternal? That's the problem, especially when trying to fasten the poem to the changing value of a dollar. It's the problem of bitter reality.
Starting in 2005, Dan recorded the poets reading live at the Mendocino Spring Poetry Celebration. He aired them on his KZYX program, Rhythm Running River, first and third Sunday afternoons from 3 to 5. Then COVID came.
And then when the pandemic hit, and we decided that we just have to do this, get people to record their stuff and send it to me, and then I'd process it. And we had no idea there would be such a good turnout for it. There was like, I think the first year there was 45 people sent stuff in. And so that's been really fun, really time consuming to get 100 to 120 poems and have to go through and clean them up a little bit and then decide what I'm going to play and not play. But I love doing it. It's kind of like I love teaching poetry in the school. I love just seeing more people having the experience of poetry. And one thing I was thinking about when I was thinking about this interview is that I'm really lucky because I get to hear the poem when some, let's say the recorded, the ones I record at the spring reading, I hear the person deliver it, okay, and that's one experience. And then I go back and I edit the recording, and then I hear it a couple more times just because I'm trying to fit it into the music that I've come up with. And I get to hear most of these poems that I air between 6 and 12 times. And it really makes a difference in the same way that if you read a poem once, yeah, you got an idea of what it's about, but you don't really know how much that poet put into that, how much time you can rip holes in, you know?
Well, a really good poem is packed. Every word is important and carries a certain weight, and it's all condensed and in a small package with so much information and so much feeling and impact. So it takes a while to unpack it, I guess, you know?
Yeah. And I've also found it's interesting that then when I, you know, I put the shows together and I've listened to the whole show, and then I, on Sundays or when the show airs, I listen to it and I often go, holy cow, I didn't know that's what that poem was about. It just sounds different when it comes out of a radio surrounded by the world music. All of a sudden, a whole other aspect of the poem comes out, and I'm like, wow, that was great. You know, it's, I'm, yeah, there's so much, like you say, it's like, I don't want to say a black hole because I don't think that would be the equivalent, but somehow it's all this electronic energy is just forced in, and the poets are the people that are lucky enough to get to put it on a piece of paper and somebody else checks it out. Another thing with Gordon and I were talking about is like, there's this real, in the 70s and 80s and even through part of the 90s, there was these free newspapers like the Mendocino Grapevine, the Coast Commentary. I can't think of the other ones. There were several of them in the area where you did have a poetry page and people would send their poetry in. And there's no publishing going on around here right now, except people publish their own books or whatever. And so it's this, these recordings are how, for a lot of us, that's how we're getting to hear each other, rather than read each other.
Okay. Gordon, can you talk about your feelings about the relation between poetry and music?
Well, there are people who think that poetry is music, a form of music. And trying to explain, there's a word that comes up for me, and that word is pulse. Pulse. They both have a certain pulse, which impels, there's motion, and there's a pleasurable sense from hearing music and hearing the sound or the feeling of words. Sometimes the feeling of words loses the sound even. I'm thinking, because I'm primarily, I think, a page poet. Dan mentioned the loss of the publications that we used to have back in the days of print. There were actually a number of publications, at least on the coast. They're very good publications, not just poetry, but poems were published. You could look at the poem. The eye does something that the ear cannot do. The eye can go backwards, forwards, left, right, up and down, examine, compare, review, indulge in a way that the ear can't, because as sound travels, it's gone. It's in the past. And so memory, you can try to remember what it is you just heard, but the poem as it lies on a page is present, and you can inspect it. And there are pleasures that, you know, half rhymes you see, or rhymes, half rhymes, you see them on the page, you see them, and and silently appreciate them. And that's a different form of appreciation. I try to get to the point where both experiences are combined in performance so that you are delivering what it is that has been set down on the page, but time moves when you're performing. There's a sound that is sensory and a pulse to it, counterpoint, sometimes all of that stuff. But a sensory experience with music that kind of is indicated with the silent display of a poem as it lies on a page in its utmost abstracted form. I went to Catholic school too, just like Dan. And in high school, we had a series of, each year in high school, there were very good prose and poetry for enjoyment. So that was a big, thick book that you had each of the 4 years in Catholic schools, with a good collection of representations of literature of various sorts, including, of course, poetry. And I remember Drach, the one I'm still struck with it, A.E. Hausman, loveliest of trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough. Okay, well, you hear me saying that, loveliest of trees, the cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough. And you hear me sort of hum it. Well, there's the music of it, the hum of it. But the meaning of it, when I saw it, it's like, what, gee, what do you put it? Why not just say, the cherry tree is lovely and has white flowers on the boughs. Isn't that saying the same thing? Isn't that the information? Aren't they both both providing the same information? Well, no, loveliest of trees and cherry now is hung with bloom along the bough, is doing more than just providing botanical facts. It's providing an emotional performance, an emotional experience, as music does.
This year, the in-person event is back.
So Dan and I are going to confer on May 19th as to what's going on, but we're announcing the date of June 11th to meet physically again at the Hill House, or some alternative maybe in Mendocino. But Dan will be recording and running the readings as usual, and running the recordings on his show for as many weeks as it takes. It's an open reading. We are going to be announcing the events as we go. Dan will be announcing it with his mailing list. People should get on my email list, gblack@mcn.org, gblack@mcn.org. And we both are going to be announcing on KZYX and by email as to what is going to be taking place.
So that's Sunday, June 11th. So people show up when, noonish? Is that when people show up?
They show up at noon, gather, drink coffee, sip wine, and get together and see each other from all over the northern counties, really. And we start reading at 1. 4 minutes. 4 minutes, which is a long time when you're up there. And it's time enough for 1 to 3 poems, knock out the personal history and boozing and so forth. It's the distilled language. And so prepare 4 minutes. And so we run from 1 o'clock until we run out of poets. And then we take a break and go around town and have a good time and reappear, start to gather again at 5 o'clock and read again at 6 o'clock. So there are two sessions. The first session is a very exciting warm-up session. The evening session, people come back really strong and charged. And so there are two sessions. Prepare 4 minutes and practice. Come on in, step up, whether you've ever done it before, whether you've never done it before. Yes, put your feet on the ground and do it. It's going to be good if you give it just some practice, and that's all it takes.
Hey, what if you couldn't come in the afternoon? Could you come in the evening and read?
You could do one session or both sessions, and you could have 2 4-minute segments, different one for the first session, then the second session. That's what most people do, is they, I'd say the majority read at both of them. But some people just come for one or the other. But do come and listen. You know, some people have been kind of like, well, it's a long way to go to read for 4 minutes, but you know, it's like to listen for a couple of hours to the other poets in your, and listen and look at the poets in your community. I mean, we're an interesting group, visually.
Something happens with this 4 minute format. It's not like I'm going to drive along distance to read for 4 minutes. Come on, come on. No, something happens. The entire event lifts off the ground because it's a concentrated effort, and the audience gets lifted by the distilled language, and the entire event is in at an entirely different level.
Let's close with some poetry if each of you could read.
It's called Helter Shelter. Shelter in place. We hunker down. We grasp flashlight, cell phone, microwave. We shelter in place. We trace a space, duck and cover in the name of the face, the race, and the holy place. We shelter in place. We fall in to the fallout shelter of place. We do not evolve. We do not go past the threat of what has passed. We shelter in place. We drove it till it dropped. We try to get a jump start in the heart. We thicken the pace without a trace. We shelter in place. Shelter in space, the place of silence between two words, the black screen between frames of light, the unmappable border between chaos and order. Shelter in spaced out confusion, an illusion of protection from infection of spirit. Shelter in grace. We embrace the light that makes the truth visible. We erase the false face and replace wall with doorway. We step through with sight, remain in light. We shelter in grace.
Nice.
That's it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that one. Okay, here's one. Weth door. For the last time, I turn your lock and place the key. Door now closed to me. I've given you the shoulder for years. shoved you into your approximate frame as the cabin shifted on the undulating slope, rigged you a brace bar, turnbuckle tuned, painted you white inside, hoisted sagging panels, tugged, rattled your humble handle, wrestled you with creak and squeak. Cabin, the canyon at my back, while I stood nosing your fluorescences, off sprays of paint from some forgotten hand, colors layered, chipped, crackleured, but never caught the swipe of sun on opal fog over the peeling rose. Must have been just looking at my feet. I must have been just looking at my feet.